hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, the views of our very special guest today. His name is Charles Kappas, and we're going to be talking about his book, America's Financial Reckoning Day. Did I get the pronunciation right, Chuck?
Well, you did, Dr. Sand. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Anyway, of course, this is a fascinating book. And, of course, it's subtitled, How You Can Survive America's Monetary and Political Decline in the 21st Century. And, of course, basically what we are going to do is just go through some of the standard questions. What prompted you to write this book? And what are some of the issues that you think that we need to be focusing on?
Well, they say your book should always be something that relates to the news. They call that a media hook in our business. And I can't think of anything more important than the financial issues that are coming against this country and our people's money in this nation. And they need to understand this. I was speaking with clients today, earlier, and we have the stocks market today, you know, closed at a new record high, 12,962 points.
Oh, boy, we ought to get in there, shouldn't we?
Yeah, let's get in there, why don't we?
And just before it drops.
And it's up 153 points. But at the very same time, you have the U.S. dollar index hitting an all-time low. I mean, this is they should usually go in together. And what does that tell you, except there's a major disconnect in these equity and these capital markets. And at the same time, we see that the euro is up today. And at a new exchange against the dollar. I mean, the euro is a major theme in my book, by the way, America's Financial Reckoning Day. I think we're going to lose our status as a reserve currency in the world. This is probably no secret and certainly not among our enemies. And for the first time last year, the euro bond has more market capitalization in the world than U.S. securities. Imagine that. So we really are looking at the euro being a major currency on the horizon. And, of course, this will make the European Central Bank the most powerful bank in the world. That's all in my book. But what really prompted me to write the book was a couple I came across, good books. One was called Financial Reckoning Day, and that was by Bill Bonner and Wiggins back in 2004. And it really highlighted some issues, global issues, as well as the baby boomer issue, the demographics of that. And at the same time, Lawrence Kotlikoff wrote his book, The Coming Generational Storm. Now, he's been quoted a lot in the media, but it's an important book. It really points to the unfunded liabilities of this nation that we're facing. In fact, he now puts that, I think, at $66 trillion. And that's just a little bit of pocket change, don't you think?
Well, of course, there's not that much money in the entire world. And, of course, the problem is that America is not only fiscally bankrupt and financially bankrupt, we're spiritually bankrupt, and that, of course, is where the real problem is.
Well, I've also mentioned, as you know, David Walker, and that was an important interview he had on 60 Minutes, and he's making the rounds, trying to warn people about the same issue.
Now, maybe you ought to tell our listeners who David Walker is, just in case they don't know.
Okay, he's the Comptroller General of the Government Accounting Office, and that 60-minute interview, it's about 10 minutes. It's posted on my website, and I might, people can actually look at that if they want. It's at chuckkappas.com, that's C-O-P-P-E-S. And he highlights that same issue. So basically, Dan, we're facing major structural imbalances, some economic distortions in America, and this could all have a rather prophetic theme, I believe, from a Christian point of view.
And I think you're absolutely right. Well, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment. Now, we are going to be bringing another station on, and so we're going to lose our stations for 3 minutes. So we'll be just a little repetitive for the next 3 minutes, and then we'll sail on through the rest of the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Charles Kappas, and we're going to be talking about his book, America's Financial Reckoning Day, how you can survive America's monetary and political decline in the 21st century. And when we talk about America's financial decline, why, that's so incongruous. Today, the stock market hit an all-time high. I mean, things look really great. We're told that the employment is up. Certainly, unemployment is down. Inflation is under control. I mean, our manufacturing is up. Everything looks great. The good times are going to roll. But as Chuck brings out so well in his book, an excellent book, I might add, there's a lot of difference between appearances and reality. And, of course, Chuck has written this book in an effort to warn the American people about what's really going on. And, of course, so much of what's going on today has to do with the Federal Reserve System. So do you want to just begin to tell our listeners how the Federal Reserve System got established and what has been its legacy as the central bank of the United States?
Yeah, okay, Stan. Based on what you just said there, I like to quote that an optimist is one who doesn't know all the facts. So I'm out to dispel that, stocks being up and everything. And this is an asset bubble, by the way, as you know, has been created by the central bank policies. This is called monetizing the debt, liquidity, helicopter money, whatever you want to call it. And it's had quite a damaging effect on the U.S. for the past some 90 years and needs to be clearly understood. I think you'd almost have to go back to the goldsmiths back in the Middle Ages where they were storing, you know, people's precious metals, and they had vaults, I guess. And so this was a safe area to keep people's assets. But they were giving the receipts to the people, which were 100% backed and could be claimed in a segregated manner even, or a fungible manner, against or for the gold and silver that was held by the goldsmiths. That was what we came to know as fiduciary money. What eventually happened, though, they discovered not everybody really wanted their metals all at the same time. That's why they had it there anyway. So they started being loan brokers. They started issuing these warehouse receipts. They looked like the real thing. They could be redeemed in money even. But it was based on the fact that not everybody had come for their money at the same time. That's called a fractional reserve system. And so the deposits in the vaults became both an asset and a liability. I want your people to think about that for a minute.
Hold on, though. We're going to be back here in just a moment as we bring our other stations right on board here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Chuck Coppice, and, of course, his book, America's Financial Reckoning Day. And he was going into the background of the Federal Reserve System, and he said if you really want to understand our central bank, well, you've got to go back to the goldsmiths in the Middle Ages there in Europe, and they were the people who stored gold. And, of course, you didn't want to keep your gold with you all the time. Somebody could steal it, so it was kept in a vault. And you got a receipt for it, and that receipt was as good as gold. And then pretty soon the goldsmiths would start giving out receipts for gold, and that came to be known as fiduciary money. Real money was gold and silver. Fiduciary money was, of course, what you had when you had a receipt. And then the goldsmiths noticed that most people wouldn't come at the same time. Everybody didn't come at the same time to get their money. So they began lending out a lot more receipts than they actually had money. And that is where the term fractional money came around. In other words, they only kept a fraction in reserve of what they had put out in the form of receipts. And suddenly you could expand the money supply, and the goldsmiths became very, very prosperous, putting out receipts for other people's money, and yet the money wasn't there. They created these receipts out of nothing, and as long as everybody didn't come at one time to get their money, why, it worked great. So we have the regular money, which is gold and silver. We have fiduciary money. Then we have fractional money, and you pick up the story, Chuck.
Yeah, well, think about that. You have your money in the bank today down the street, and your money there is both an asset from the bank, but it's a liability because it's owed to you. In other words, it's supposed to be something you can come and get at any time. Well, how can they be lending out all your money when you can come get it at the same time? So it's the magic of banking, you know, that they can do this. And, of course, they create this out of thin air. In fact, they created their money out of debt. So every dollar that's in circulation in the U.S. or abroad was created by a debt instrument and or a debt action, you know. So the final form of money didn't take long in the evolution of money, and that is fiat money. And that just means a government decree of legal tender law, and it starts to just print money with no backing whatsoever, and that's pretty much the shape we're in today. It's a slippery slope, for sure. This basically scheme all started, really got underway with the Bank of England in 1694 under King William, and he didn't figure this out, but the money changers and financiers at the time did, and they informed him how he could fund his wars, because kings like to go to war. So they issued war bonds against paper money to finance the war, just like we issue U.S. Treasury securities and to create Federal Reserve notes. And it's a note. That's a debt instrument. So they interest is paid on that, too. So the bankers make a lot of money on this. It's called usury. This is what the Bible prohibits, by the way. And this is what the bankers are involved in. I think the one who perfected it the most had to be the Rothschild family out of Germany. And they did this in the Middle Ages by financing wars, kings against kings, and so on. They even financed our Civil War here in the U.S. That they funded the North and the South. So we're stuck today pretty much with fiat currency, and this has been what has led up to a central bank in the U.S. And this was finally imported, or the idea was, to the U.S. Right after our own American Revolution. We had experiments with colonial script, and it became worthless. And so our founding fathers, our wise founding fathers, understood the calamity and the deceitfulness of fiat money and the temptation of governments to print too much, obviously. And so they made that clear in Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, saying no state shall emit bills of credit paper, but only gold and silver coin as legal tender. So that's fiduciary money, and that's what we should have, or they wanted us to have in this nation. And that was quite a battle. And it started roughly in around 1791. The Congress granted the first bank of the U.S. This was by some mercantilists who, I guess, the Federalist under Hamilton. He believed in a strong central government and these kind of schemes. In fact, he was an aide of some of the central bankers in the U.S. at that time, who were trying to charter the bank. Well, they gave it a shot. They funded it with Rothschild money. That's historically the case. Thomas Jefferson, later in 1791, said, "I wish it were possible to obtain a single amendment to our Constitution taking from the federal government their power of borrowing." And by 1811, they succeeded to shut down the First Bank of America. But in the War of 1812, it came, they needed to fund the Republic again. And the same people conspired again to create the Second Bank of the U.S., and you know the story behind that, with Andrew Jackson fighting that for his two terms in office and almost got assassinated because he did shut down the banks, our central bank, in 1836. And that's quite a story. It's all in my book. But this finally then leads us to the Federal Reserve System in 1913, and the most immediate things leading up to that was the Civil War. Again, another war issue where they needed to fund the war efforts. And under Lincoln, they succeeded, the bankers, in creating the National Banking Act of 1863. This essentially created a halfway house to central banks by federalizing a bunch of state banks. But at any rate, that was something that was doing harm. And Lincoln knew this, and just about 40 days into his new term, his second term, he was assassinated. And that's historically the case, why that happened. Even President James Garfield said in 1881, he said, "Whoever controls the volume of money in our country is absolute master of all commerce." He tried to stop the bankers, and he was assassinated in September of 1881. So it's a pretty dark history. I guess you could sum my book up too with the love of money is the love of money is the root of all evil, and it's really that's what you see throughout history. And so prior to the Federal Reserve, there were bank panics that were created by the money trust, and they did this in 1873, in 1884, 1893, and finally in 1907 on Wall Street, they created quite a panic through the Rockefeller and Morgan Trust families' banking operations, and they were pushing deliberately for a lender of last resort so that they could create a central bank, monetize the debt, collect interest, and basically create money out of thin air through their member banks, a banking cartel. And that's basically what we have in the U.S. today, the banking cartel with the Federal Reserve. It's not, it's questionable. There's a question whether it's part of the government. It's really not. It's never been audited. It responds to the Congress. It's appointed by the president, but it's very independent, and its member banks are just about a third of the banks in the U.S. are members of that cartel. And this was all created by Paul Warburg. In fact, he was in the cartoon Daddy Warbucks back in those days. They were actually cartooning him. They were saying Daddy Warbucks or Warburg, because he was a very famous banker on Wall Street. He was from the firm of Kuhn, Loeb, Schiff, and the Rothschild Interest in Europe. And he helped create the National Monetary Commission with Senator Nelson Aldrich. And the NFC was basically a think tank for central banking. And finally, in 1910, they conspired in one of the most secretive meetings probably in the history of the U.S. and most important. And that was their trip, a chartered railroad car trip in late 1910 down to Jekyll Island Resort in Georgia. And this was represented by the Rockefeller and the Morgan bankers, who were meeting in secret to create a lender of last resort, meaning the central bank of the U.S. And they were very careful in coming up with a name, not to call it a bank. Very careful. They wanted to call it a Federal Reserve System, because the banks around Europe are the Bank of England and so on. They are called banks. And there was plenty of people resisting the idea of a central bank in the U.S., and particularly Charles Lindbergh. And so finally, in late 1913, December 1913, the Glass-Owen Bill finally passed by a majority in both houses. In fact, Lindbergh at the time said, "This act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth, and when the president signs this act, the invisible government by the money power, proven to exist by the money trust investigations, will be legalized." And, of course, that is what Wright Patman said. He said, we basically have two governments in this, in our country today, the constitutional government and the Federal Reserve System.
And I think
that important.
I think it's so important that people understand. I mean, you think you elect your elected representatives, but, you know, they, it takes you, you know, probably $5-10 million to win a contested congressional election today. Where does that money come from? You know, probably $20-30 million to become a senator. $100 million to become the president. Who's got that sort of money? Why, of course, the bankers do. And, of course, we have the finest politicians that money could buy. They have the advantage. We have to work for our money. They can create it out of nothing. I mean, this is the most amazing scam in the entire world. And simply every time that somebody takes on a debt, they make money. They actually create the money, and then they charge interest on it. And so basically what we're seeing today, they tell you that we have, you know, 2% interest. We really have 10% interest because inflation has nothing to do with, of course, increasing food prices. Increasing food prices reflect the increase in the amount of money in circulation. And they're really increasing the money in circulation about 10%, 11% a year right now. That's the inflation. That's the rate at which the money that you've worked so hard all of your life is losing its value. The dollar has fallen from about $1.20 in the basket of currencies to about 80 cents here. What is it, the last two and a half years, Chuck?
Right. I think you're giving the euro equation there, I think.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And so in contrast to the euro. And believe me, it's going to fall probably another 20 or 30%. And with that will come the loss of the value of your currency. Oh, you'll have the same number of dollars, but they just won't have any value. This is, of course, how people lose their savings, everything they worked their whole life for. And that's the way the system is set up. They win, you lose, unless you understand. Well, Chuck, you go ahead. Now, do you want to go on then to what's been the leading to the financial reckoning that we face today?
Well, it certainly has been related to the activities of the Federal Reserve contributing to our welfare state in the U.S. Monetary inflation leads to price inflation, so it's cause and effect, and that's why automobiles and homes, let's say back in the 1960s, you could probably get a Ford Mustang for about $2,000, $2,500, and a house for $25,000. So we can see how prices have gone up, and this is not because of union labor and capitalism and these forces. It's through strictly putting too much money, broad money supply, into circulation. And can I say something about the Federal Reserve Act? Was passed in 1913, just 10 months prior to that. The 16th Amendment, creating the Internal Revenue Service, was created as a great means of concealing monetary inflation by contracting the money supply. And we've talked about that before, but I think that's very important to know that it was the same forces, Nelson Aldrich and his people, were promoting the Internal Revenue Service, a direct tax on personal income, at the same time they were advancing the central bank, and it's for that key reason. Ron Paul understands this very clearly, and he states that quite a bit. But, well, they say follow the money, follow the power. And the Fed is leading, and its policies is leading up to our reckoning day. And this has a legacy that goes back to actually almost to Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, Kennedy's New Frontier later, the Johnson's Great Society, the Nixon War years. And we know that now we're facing, the national debt is now officially, I think, around $9 trillion. We reached our first trillion in 1980, so we've really been on a roll since the Reagan revolution. And it doesn't matter, by the way, if it's Republicans or Democrats in there. You know, the Cato Institute calls it one Republican party now. I like that term. I use that term in my book quite a bit because there's no real difference. Ron Paul was on television last night, and he said, "I'm the only Republican running for office." And they said, "What do you mean by that? What do you mean?" Well, he pointed to the obvious. There's no difference. As George Wallace said, not a dime's worth of difference. So basically, the Fed has contributed to the spending that we've had in the welfare state, and nothing demonstrates that more than the Social Security entitlement program today, which, again, the unfunded liabilities are now on the order of $66 trillion on top of our debts and twin deficits and all of these issues. I mean, this is what ought to concern us, and these are the things that are leading up to a reckoning day. We know, I'm a baby boomer. In fact, today's my birthday. I turned 55, and it's good to be on your show, Stan.
Well, happy birthday.
And I've had people ask me, well, are you going to be a member of ARP, you know? That was founded in 1958, and I says, no, I've never been a strong advocate of Marxist policies, you know. I don't care. That's about the most socialist organization in the U.S., And it's going to be a generational war that's going to be developing over the younger people trying to fund the older generation. And it's the ARP ads that are trying to keep everything, keep the status quo, and we seriously need reform. And this is what Kolakoff's book mentioned in The Coming Generational Storm. The title says it all. And I think the subtitle is What You Need to Know About Your Economic Future or something. So it's...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Charles Coppice's book, America's Financial Reckoning Day. And we're simply talking about the fact that if you look and see what is really going on, the massive debts we have accrued so that we'll be able to pay Social Security payments to the baby boomers when they retire, there's no money there. There is no Social Security fund. They're simply lying to you. They tell you there's a fund. Oh, there's a folder. And if you open the folder there in Washington, D.C., you'll find an IOU. The government says, we'll pay, but where's the government going to get the money? I mean, governments have no money other than what they take from us by taxes, but they raise the taxes, why people quit working, what they can print, but, of course, printing is inflationary, what they can borrow, but it has to be paid back sometime. Those are the only sources of money.
Right.
So, I mean, where is the money going to come from? and it's not going to come. I mean, this has been tried by other countries, and it always results in chaos, collapse, and then, of course, either revolutionary or you start in all over again. You collapse the currency, impoverish the people, and start in all over again. People don't believe that can happen here, Chuck.
Oh, I know. I've talked to people. There's people in my own family think I'm a little nuts, you know. Nice book you wrote. Let's face it, you know, we're not the only we're not the only nation in the world with demographic problems in terms of retiring communities and generations here. This is being repeated throughout Europe. Japan's already facing quite a challenge as well because the birth rates have gone down so much, and part of this was the 60s and adoption of the pill and so on. There's not as many people having kids, and there's just not enough to fund these funds. In fact, the trust funds that you refer to are actually empty. That's pretty alarming when you think about it for a minute. I mean, $9 trillion of national debt, and about 40% of that, $4 trillion of that, is earmarked or has been spent already and replaced with what they call special obligation bonds put into these three trust funds. Medicare, government workers, and Social Security. That, again, creating an asset and a liability. They dropped in a presumed asset, but it has a liability. It still has to be paid by the future generation. So it's a political scam again. It's another banking scam almost. And so the U.S. is technically bankrupt in this regard, and this is the challenges that we're facing on the horizon. And what's been leading up to our reckoning day is not only these issues, but I meet people who are not aware that our dollar is not backed with any reserves whatsoever. There's no backing for our currency, even in a fractional way. We have a complete fiat currency, and this was not always supposed to be the case. In the post-war period, they set up the Bretton Woods Agreement at the UN Monetary Conference, and created the IMF as the lender of last resort and so on. And these are the things in the post-war period under Nixon in 1971. He finally closed redemption or suspended the gold payment for U.S. dollars that were offshore, and we could not redeem them anymore. We were printing too many dollar bills, right? Too much currency was floating around the world. In fact, the majority of our U.S. currency is offshore today, the vast majority of it. And so now we just have a floating currency. In fact, all currencies in the world are just floating currencies. They're fiat.
What happens if all those foreign currencies come home here? In other words, what happens if China starts to divest itself of the $70 billion it's holding in U.S. dollars? And certainly Japan probably has about $50 or $60 billion. What happens if they start simply spending that and or coming into America and buying things with it?
Well, it sounds like you've been looking through my book there, Dr. Stan. that is seriously what's on the horizon potentially, and we're talking now about really our ideological enemies, Red China, Arab nations, OPEC nations. They're holding huge currency reserves. Japan holds probably the largest block of currency reserves, and that's probably through our trade policies over trade deficits, which we've exported our inflation, that idea of exporting our inflation. And so they have a large currency reserves. China is second, I believe, and then the United Kingdom. And of course, OPEC nations as well, because they have a lot of that oil money over there. So these are the... It's really setting us up for a major bond liquidation or currency collapse in the U.S., and this would be a hyperinflationary scenario.
And, of course, the average individual could not imagine. It couldn't happen here. They wouldn't let it happen. It would do something, and the trouble is there's nothing you can do. I mean, we are simply trapped in this system, and, of course, it's only those who really understand, make preparations now, who have any hope of surviving. America's financial day of reckoning. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest is Charles Koppus. And, Chuck, now what does this have to do with the North American Union? Who's behind the movement? What is this? Why is this significant? And what can we do about it?
Well, I guess we're beginning to hear a little bit more about this. Certainly on Lou Dobbs' program seems to be coming a little closer to what this is about. And Ron Paul, again, is stating these things as well. I guess we would have to see it this way, and I developed this in my book. You have a crisis that's on the horizon, and I believe that there are certain elitist globalists in this country who are trying to restructure our political society in such a way, or as a contingency plan, to set us up for their agenda, which has been underway for some time. And I believe that we're on a slippery slope in this regard. We have, Benjamin Franklin said that those who would give up their essential liberties for a little peace and safety deserve neither. In this age of terrorism, we are basically creating quite a surveillance society. And in fact, there was a CNN report last night on Crossroads, it's been running on TV, and how terrorism, their next broadcast is going to be tonight, how terrorism is leading to the loss of civil rights. And these are the things that are concerning me as we see all of these anti-terrorist bills and Patriot Acts and intelligence sources and ID. These are the kind of things that set up an authoritarian government, enabling acts. And a president is acting more like an imperial president these days. Someone said, William Pitt, that necessity is the argument of tyrants. It's the creed of slaves. So we need to be questioning these things. And the North American Union could very well fit into a strategy if America faces a hyperinflationary cycle, depressionary collapse, that they are going to move in place to create a basket currency. In fact, I understand that they've already created the Amero currency, they call it, and this would be essentially be a basket currency for the U.S., replacing the U.S. dollar in this event, and to compete as a trading bloc with the European Union.
And, of course, this would be the Mexican currency and, of course, the Canadian currency. We would lose, of course, our currency, but with that we would lose our sovereignty. I mean, when a nation loses the control of its monetary system, it loses its sovereignty, and that really seems to be what the agenda is, the destruction of American sovereignty.
Well, look at the European Union. You know, they need urgent.
Yeah, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is Chuck Koppus, and we're talking about his book, America's Financial Reckoning, Dave. And before we go on, Chuck, would you like to get your website out and tell people how to get copies of your book?
They can get a signed copy of my book, Special Reports, and that, and they can learn more at chuckkoppus.com. That's C-O-P-P-E-S. And America's Financial Reckoning Day, about 350 pages, and has quite a bit of information. Everything I share with you or on the air is in the book, and there's plenty of information there. But I was very much compelled to write the book to put these things in perspective, because it's very frustrating to try and share these things in only bits and parts with people, and it's a story that needs to be understood. Americans are very confused about these things. I can even see it in Lou Dobbs' face, you know, wondering, what is this North American about, union about? Well, it was basically, it's an extension of the NAFTA treaties of 1994, and that was basically in the works by the front organizations and think tanks, Rockefeller think tanks like the Council of America. It's been around since 1965. And the larger agenda is really to create a free trade area of the Americas. That's the FTAA. North American Union would just be a step in that direction, and that includes 34 nations, including Central American and Caribbean countries, Haiti, Trinidad, Chile, and so on, representing about 800 million people in this trading bloc. These are people who feel that we need to compete on the world stage as a trading bloc with the Far East, Asian trading bloc, the European Union, now 27 nations, and this is called, or what Brzezinski liked to call, progressive regionalization. They also call it harmonization, harmonizing us by way of immigration into the larger NAFTA perimeter, with particularly Mexico. And they're encouraging free trade, which is nothing more than round-trip trade, where they're always adopting the free trade agreements, whether it be CAFTA or NAFTA or the World Trade Organization and so on. They're the same architects that are behind this. In fact, the North American Summit that was held in March of 2005 on George Bush's ranch was hosted then by Vincente Fox and Paul Martin. And it was basically a position paper written by Robert A. Pasteur. He's the director of the Center for North American Studies and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Basically a document that came out of the CFR. You can go to a website called spp.gov to see a little bit more about that. I would say that this is basically a violation of the Logan Act of 1799, in which states that no private citizen can be involved in our foreign policy or issues of this kind. They can't act in a private citizens can't go around expressing or trying to restructure our society or enter into agreements and secret agreements and that sort of stuff. This should have recently been applied to Nancy Pelosi, and it's been applied before to Jesse Jackson, Jimmy Carter, and so on. But we have a very secretive group that's been driving this, these think tanks and elitists, and they're very clear in their goals. They want to create this North American market by 2010. That's just about 2.5 years off.
And what they really want to do, of course, is to away with our sovereignty. They want, of course, equalize income throughout the North American unit. They want to get rid of our jobs, our manufacturing, and raise the living standards of the American worker to that of the Mexican peasant. And this is really a scheme to, have certainly an equal salary in the United States and in Mexico, or certainly redistribution, equitable distribution of income between nations. And so, if you're an elitist, well, that sounds fine, because it's not your income that's going to be, of course, equalized. It's going to be that of the middle classes. If we begin lowering the living standards, would that be a fair assessment, Chuck?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think there's always contingency plans. I mean, think tanks, that's what they think about, some of these groups. They're, the Council on Foreign Relations says it's nothing more than a think tank. Well, it advocates our foreign policy. It writes position papers. It's about as elitist as you can get, and then the Trilateral Commission and these other groups. So this is really, in fact, they've taken polls, in which 80% in a Congressional Institute poll said they believe that there's a close network of special interests who run the country. This would be a kind of a shadow government. And it's always the same crowd, the same people are drafted from the same elitist organizations and so on into the State Department to head up our administrations. It doesn't matter, Carol Quigley said in his book Tragedy and Hope, it doesn't matter which political party gets in. They're identical in carrying out these agendas. It was under Bill Clinton that we got the NAFTA treaty. It was under George Bush who advanced the CAFTA treaty, which was an extension and on the way towards creating a seamless market, as they like to put it. So the cat's out of the bag right now. Whether we can stop this, I don't know. But I can tell you this, if a financial crisis is looming on the horizon, and it is, and we collapse our currency in a German-style hyperinflation or Argentina or something, these people have a contingency plan to run through and reintroduce a new currency, and under those conditions, advance their cause. It's almost like a Hegelian dialectic, they call it.
But Chuck, what will happen to the average person out there listening to the audience? What will happen to the elderly? What will happen, of course, to the guy who's 55 years old, like you, who's out there working in a trade or working for, on a regular salary? What's going to happen to them, if we get into this hyperinflationary spiral? You can't keep running 10% inflation a year, without destroying the very fabric of the society.
Well, this is something that I don't like thinking about. It's when the social contract breaks down and the division of labor and you only have to look at these countries that have suffered a hyperinflationary cycle. And Argentina had 1,000,000% inflation at one point, and we're, you know, basically people then under those conditions always look to the government for the answer. And I have to tell you, I just feel that there is a contingency that they are anticipating to create, you know, on the road to a new Tower of Babel in the U.S.
All right, fine. Well, now, based on what you've said and what you've written, how does all this fit into a prophetic scenario for the future?
Well, that's a pretty big question. We've my book develops quite a theme on the way to geopolitics in the world and how we're seeing a realignment of world power, shifting to the European market, which is now have the largest gross domestic product in the U.S. and is a sleeping giant waiting to become a world or superpower in the world today. And in addition to that, we have tensions in the Middle East. We have tensions in China over the Taiwan Relations Act and our pledged support for Taiwan. So these are some of the big issues that are converging in the world today. I've tried to put this theme or put this in perspective in my book with the conditions that are developing in the world today. And as I've indicated, the book is written with a Christian worldview, and a majority of evangelicals believe that we're living in the last days. I think the evidence of this has been the popularity of the Left Behind series by Dr. Tim LaHaye with Jerry Jenkins. They've written about 12 books in as many years and sold almost 80 million copies. It's a tremendous series, and it really highlights the idea. The premise is based on a clear distinction about the church age concluding and a distinction that the nation of Israel is separate in the future, and or basically historical premillennialism. The Bible indicates in the future that there's going to be a seven-year period, a tribulation period. Prior to those days, the Lord is going to take out or translate all believers, and millions are going to be left behind. That is the theme of the book. That's what I've tried to key into my book. And it's very similar, I guess, to the Noah's Ark, and that people were put into the Ark of Safety, and then judgment fell. Same with Lot was taken out of Sodom. The resulting chaos is going to produce a world leader who's going to emerge out of Europe, the Bible says. And this will bring in, he will bring peace to the Middle East. Conditions are going to worsen until finally what the Bible predicts in Armageddon and the coming of Christ in a thousand-year reign. So that basically is the theme of the Left Behind series, and I believe we're living in these particular times. Israel, someone said, is the super sign of the times we're living in.
Well, now, of course, if that is what's going to happen, then Christians have nothing to worry about. They shouldn't even bother to make preparations because they're going to be whisked out before anything gets happens. But what happens if maybe the Christians are not whisked out? Maybe it's a mid-trib rapture or maybe even a post-trib rapture. And the people have made no preparation. Certainly, this was the message that they had in Hitler's Germany, and so many of the Christians really believed that, you know, they were going to be raptured out if things got bad. And you go to Germany today, and the churches are empty, specifically the evangelical Christian churches, because their ministers had misled them.
I think we need to be prepared. I mentioned this in my book. There's some contingency planning that's necessary. I mean, we don't know when America's reckoning day could be. And it could be asset, capital markets could unfold, unravel at any time. Our enemies could dump our, there's plenty of talk about China and Russia and Arabs and so on, dumping our dollars in this. We're very vulnerable to this, to economic warfare. So I've been a Boy Scout for 6 years, and I always tell people to be prepared. So there's certainly a need for that. I'm just saying there's some tension with the fact that we are living or appear to be living in the last days, and we need to have a heads up. So I'm all for preparation, but you've had Constance Cumby on your program, I believe.
Many, many times. In fact, we're having her on again, I guess, next week. She'll be with us again. And, of course, what I always like to say, well, what happens if, you know, if the rapture comes 10 years after America's fallen, our currency has been destroyed, and our people impoverished. So what should people be doing in the way of making contingency plans at this time in history?
Well, there's plenty they can be doing. I mean, in light of the no doubt we're living in uncertain times and prophetic times. And Patrick Henry said, for my part, whatever anguish your spirit it might cost, I'm willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. And even the Bible says a prudent man sees evil and hides himself, and the naive proceed and pay the penalty. For the past 15 years, I've been helping clients with some portfolio diversification, particularly in the area of precious metals, and some hedging strategies. We know things are going to get worse, and perhaps we could see this in the next 20 to 30 months even. We do need to be prepared. We need to be aware of what's going on in the world today. And my general advice to investors is that they need to be contrarians. In other words, not always listening to the Wall Street advice and so on, and to be willing to go against the grain. And Wall Street economist John Kenneth Galbraith once said there's two kinds of forecasters, those who don't know and those who don't know they don't know. So, I mean, if we have some insight on where the direction these things are going, potentially, we can invest and we can be careful in what we're doing. In my book, I also illustrate what I call an investment triangle, and it's based on Ecclesiastes 11:2. It's to divide your portion, it says, to seven or eight, for you don't know what misfortune may occur on the other. So it's just prudent or a good idea to do some of these things. And basically, I suggest that a core position should be in precious metals or tangible assets. In addition to, on the other side of that triangle, people might have cash and savings accounts. And then in addition, some income funds on the other side. I explain this in my book, and I think this information alone is worth the price of the book. And it's also on my business website, which they can link to at chuckkoppis.com.
Well, now, somebody just called in and asked, does any foreign country have a solid currency? In other words, a currency that is backed by gold would be able to maintain its value.
No, there's no gold-backed currency. It's been proposed for the euro, perhaps, but not even the Swiss are doing this, really. So, like I said, we're all basically, the 16 major currencies are all fiat currencies today. And but I do favor the euro for the reasons we spoke about earlier. I have plenty of clients who have euro accounts, which they can access. There's only one bank I'm aware of in the U.S. that really does this, and that's through EverBank, everbank.com. And they can denominate a single currency or a mixed currency accounts. The minimums are $10,000, $20,000 for those CDs, 90-day CDs, and they can secure those. They're FDIC insured, and you basically get a currency appreciation and so on. There is some currency risk, but the trend's pretty strong. Just for a simple savings account, in a euro account, for example, is $2,500, and they could check that out at everbank.com. The euro, in my opinion, is going to be the new reserve currency of the world. The U.S. dollar was the premier currency at the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944. In the post-war period, the dollar was the strongest in the world, undisputed, and we replaced the British pound sterling at that point, and ever since, England's never had a strong economy, really, since. And so we're being set up by sheer volume. The euro is now advancing in central bank reserves and in transactions on Forex and so on. Even the bond market now has exceeded the U.S., it's no secret that China is moving in this area. And Russia as well. It trades more in the eurozone than it does anywhere else anyway, and so does Iran. So this is the trend. We need to get out. We need to be careful not to be in U.S. dollar-denominated assets.
Basically, your message is get out of dollars, get into something that is really solid, that is not based upon a fiat money, at least something that will not tend to lose value as much as the dollar is going to. Would that be a fair estimate?
Yeah, a contrarian strategy is a hedging strategy, a defensive strategy. It means going against the grain. It's the hardest thing people will ever do. Richard Russell, he's a wonderful newsletter writer, Dow Theory Letters, and so on. He says the whether the U.S. dollar will survive. He says this is the single biggest question facing the U.S. today, and ironically, he says 99% of Americans don't know enough to ask that question. We need to kind of short the banking system. I think it's okay for a little while, but in my book I do list some banks and things and ideas, T-bill accounts, hard currency funds, and hedge funds.
All right, fine. So basically, once again, how can they get your book?
They can order a signed copy, and that's at chuckkoppes.com, C-O-P-P-E-S.
Chuckkoppes.com. Okay, fine. And is it available at Amazon or Barnes & Noble? Or?
That's true, yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, fine. So if you'd like to get a copy of the book again, America's Financial Reckoning Day, our guest is Chuck Koppes, and of course, it's a fascinating read. It's something that everybody out there in the listening audience should know, should understand, and begin making preparations to defend themselves. Well, Chuck, we've got just 3 minutes for you to wrap up today's program. Why don't you take off from there?
Okay, I'll explain my whole book in 3 minutes. You know, in addition to currency issues and that. There's a lot of information, 20 pages, I think, in my last chapter that goes into this, some smart things people can be doing, precious metals, some income ideas, and so on. Contingency planning, that's what people need. And even food storage. You've talked about that before. I'm a big advocate of that. I've actually distributed the Alpine Air food before. But we need to realize this, first of all. The Apostle Paul said, realize that in the last days, difficult times are going to come. 2 Timothy 3:1. Our nation and our world is facing or entering into some dark and prophetic times. And this was a kind of a difficult book to write. It took 500 days of research, but I was just very much compelled to tell this story. And I want to give readers a vision of hope, though. And it's hope that only a Christian worldview can provide. And it answers life's three big questions. Where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going? And so that's the story that I want to relate and hope for people. Put these things in perspective. We have nothing to fear in the future because we know God is in control. And I want to remind people of that. The Muslims say that God has no son and that Jesus never died on the cross. And we celebrate Easter just a couple weeks ago. But Jesus came as a lamb and he's coming again as a lion. And the Easter story is that there is hope beyond this world, and we can have that hope as well. It's the truth that sets people free. So that's what I want to leave people with. We have nothing to fear. The Lord is coming again, and he said to pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And I conclude my book with that message as well. We have to realize that America is in great trouble, and there is a lot of confusion out there. A lot of people are confused about the direction where things are going. And I've tried to put these things in perspective. Basically, the book outline consists of central banking and the Federal Reserve, explanation of that. Goes into the bipartisan welfare state of the U.S. and how this reckoning day is building up the conditions that we're seeing today. And I believe it's going to happen, or we're going to face these conditions within the next couple of years. I believe after a...
We're out of time, Chuck. We're going to have to let you go. But thank you so much, and I'll be calling again to get you on again.
Well, thank you, Sam, for having me. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. My guest has been Chuck Koppes, and of course his book, America's Financial Reckoning Day, and I believe it's coming. I believe it's coming because we are economically bankrupt, but we're also morally and spiritually bankrupt as well. And of course, there's no instance in all history where a nation has turned against God, has taken recognition of God out of their schools, out of the reality of our young people. Where God is not eventually turned against that nation. All you need to do, of course, get up on the Internet, and it's full of pornography. You need to go to our schools and understand that they're teaching our young people Aleister Crowley's basic concepts. Do what thou wilt, That is the whole of the law. You determine what's right and wrong. We will have clarification of values, and you become the ultimate determinant of everything. And, of course, the real answer to our problems of mankind is fear God and obey His commandments. And the older I become, the more convinced I am of the truth of that. So, under any circumstances, we think that Charles has done an excellent job. We have some other material on the finances. We have a talk on the financial tsunami. It's available either on DVD or in video. And there's a syllabus that goes along with that that explains what's happening. And then, of course, we also have a syllabus on sustainable development, a video and a four-tape set on sustainable development, so you'll understand this whole global warming scam. What it really is an attack on Western civilization. If we were to pass the Kyoto Protocol, we would have the worst recession and poverty here in North America that has ever existed, far out worse than anything that happened in 1929, and people don't understand that this is all designed. It's a lie. It's a scam. Carbon dioxide makes up less than 0.01% of the entire entire atmosphere. That's, I should say, 0.03%, and it has increased in the last 50 years about 0.01%. So it actually, of course, is increasing a little bit since we've been burning fossil fuel. But there's most of the global warming has, of course, occurred before 1940, when, of course, we began having an increase in CO2 in the atmosphere. But it is really an attempt to force us out of our cars, force us to stop using electricity, destroy the industrial base of our society. And you're not going to get that from any of the major news outlets because they're all controlled by people who have an intense hatred of our country. And, of course, while our boys are overseas fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq and probably very soon in Iran, while they, of course, are moving to destroy the very foundation of our society here at home economically, and then, of course, using these environmental laws, destroying our national sovereignty. All of this, of course, is covered in the various newsletters. Let me suggest you go up on the Internet and pull down our February newsletter to understand why we are going to attack Iran. We do hope that many of you will want to get my talk entitled The Forbidden Secret. Forbidden Secret. You need to get Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get Forbidden Secret. You need to get the two DVDs put out by Chris Pinto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and, of course, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of America's Capital, because only by understanding the secret architecture of America's capital can you understand why our men are fighting in the Middle East today and the secret destiny of America. And it all fits together in this spiritual battle we talk about so often. So go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, pull down our newsletters, listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, and please encourage others to listen. And then, of course, pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Again, our number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection until Monday. May the Lord be with you.